Well, good afternoon, good evening, and good morning to those across the pond and around the world. You're listening to Earth Changes TV Radio Hour. My name is Mitch Batras, and I'm your host. All right, welcome, welcome. Here we are in this live broadcast, June 10th. Welcome. 2 days past the Venus transit. And again, folks, I don't know about you, whether it's in my mind and I'm just open to it, or if it's an actual event, and that is the energy of Venus and its essence of acceptance, compassion, love. And I hope you've had a good experience along those lines as well. Well, folks, I'm going to keep my breaking news events, which is our tradition here. I'm going to keep the breaking news events very, very brief, and so I can spend the maximum time possible with our guest tonight. And yes, indeed, it is none other than David Icke. So without further ado, let me just jump right into a couple events. I guess you received the newsletter about the 7.2 earthquake that hit in the Russian peninsula. And yes, folks, it is true, there is a very large and active volcano right in that area. Now, this happens to come on the heels of the article that came out about 7 or 10 days ago, that the latest research suggests that the earthquake activity that occurs in Alaska, now remember, Alaska, especially the Spit, is very close. It's just across the Bering Sea to Kamchatka and the Russian Peninsula. Now, the article said that the earthquakes that occur in Alaska have a direct causal effect to Yellowstone Park. So, yes, I did monitor the Yellowstone seismic helichords, and so far everything is nominal. Still some very small seismic activity around the 0.7 to 1.5 range. Nothing unusual. But if anything does occur, you will be the first to know. All right, let me go right into the conversation and this interview with my guest. You've been waiting for it, and so have I. His name, of course, is David Icke. He is the author of several books. The one that we're going to talk about tonight, at least mostly, of course we'll go wherever we go, is Tales from the Time Loop. I believe it is his latest book, and that is probably what we'll focus on. Of course, he's also the author of Alice in Wonderland and the World Trade Center Disaster, amongst several other books, and we have all those up on the site. I encourage you to take a look. Children of the Matrix, Thou Shall Set You, And the Truth shall Set You Free, he's also a world speaker, circuit speaker. And folks, I'm just going to very briefly tell you that David has been on my radar screen for some time, and as I've told you, I've developed a black basket, a gray basket, and a white basket, and David has all three of them. And I went to a brief explanation of what that means, and perhaps it's my own growth. Who knows how this stuff unfolds? But let's bring him on now. David, are you there?
Hello, Nick.
Hello, my friend. And welcome to Earth Changes TV. This is your first time on the show, and we're glad to have you here.
Yeah, nice to be here. Actually, you talked about the Venus transit. This is the last day of my Saturn return, which, according to astrologers, can be quite a nightmare, challenging period. So, and it has been. So, I'm very, very happy to see it go today.
Well, good. I'm sorry that it was challenging. I guess it's different for all people.
I guess it is, yeah. But no, some good things have come out of it.
All right, great. Well, listen, David, I have so many questions, and Pamela gave me an assignment, and I accepted and completed the assignment.
Right.
And I do appreciate the book that you sent, so let's get right into it, if you don't mind.
Okay, fine.
I'm looking at Chapter 2, and the title is Web of Deception. And folks, if you want to follow along with me, this is out of his book, Tales from the Time Loop. David, you made a statement here, I'm quoting out of the book, that some interviewers in the mainstream media have asked me, meaning you, what was the point of people knowing what is going on?
Right.
And then you go on to say, well, if the public realized who the truth perpetrators of 9/11 were, we would not have our freedoms destroyed. Tell us about that.
Well, what happened, Mitch, to me, is that I was a television presenter with the BBC. I'd been a professional soccer player. I'd been a national spokesman for the British Green Party, which showed me that politics wasn't the answer to anything, that's for sure. And then in the early 90s, I went through a series of extraordinary spiritual, you might call, experiences. Other people would call them paranormal experiences, which basically lifted the lid off my head and blew my mind for about 3 months. It basically, symbolically, it was like sitting in a room all your life, and everyone in the room told you that this room was all that existed, and this was the world, and this was life. And then out of nowhere, someone came and took the roof off the room and said, "Oh, have a look at this, baby." And it was a massive transformation for me of consciousness. And from that time, and I, funnily enough, given the nature of a lot of the material through this show, it's in this period I went to a psychic lady trying to understand what was happening to me. And while I was there, she gave me a series of quote messages from whatever she was contacting to me. This is 1990, and it was that I was going to go out on the world stage and tell a story that the people had to know, because there was a shadow across the earth that had to be lifted. There was a story that had to be told, but also, interestingly, that there was going to be a massive spiritual transformation, and that this transformation would manifest in part as great earth changes. This is back in 1990, that there would be big volcanic eruptions, there would be earthquakes, and there would be, because the shift in consciousness which was going to occur, and you know, we can start to see this happening now, more and more people are vastly beginning to move in this direction, that this consciousness shift would manifest on a physical level as a shift in the physical earth, and also a shift in the physical body. The physical would manifest and express this consciousness shift. So it's interesting that this whole theme of earth changes is coming from many, many different directions, and it was one of the first things that I came across back in 1990. And from that time, my life became just an unbelievably synchronistic journey of walking into information, not only in abundance, but in an order that made it easier to understand. It's basically, Mitch, been like doing a jigsaw puzzle with someone handing me the pieces in the right order. And I started to realize, as this journey unfolded from the early 90s, that the world that we thought existed was actually very, very different. There were two things going on simultaneously. There was the what I call the movie, which is the version of the world and reality that we get through the mainstream media, through political announcements, through mainstream science and all this stuff. And then there was the agenda going on behind it. And this agenda was for a centralized Orwellian state, absolutely in line with George Orwell's 1984 book. If you'd have called it 2004 or 2006, the guy would have been pretty much spot on. So I started to realize that apparently random world events were not random at all. They were actually created because of the effect they had on people. And this led me to an understanding of this classic, the most effective way of mass manipulation that I've come across. They use it all the time, which I've called problem reaction solution, where if you want to change society in the way that suits you, and you know that if you announce the changes you want openly, like more and more surveillance, more and more control, militarization of domestic law enforcement, a war on terrorism, then if you announce it openly and just said we're going to do it, then you know you're going to get an adverse reaction from the people. What do you mean you're taking our freedoms away? What do you mean you got this database? What do you mean you want to microchip us? What are you talking about? So what they do is they play this problem reaction solution, as I call it. Stage one, you create a problem. It could be a 9/11, it could be a banking collapse, it could be a government collapse, it could be a war. You then communicate through an unquestioning mainstream media, which is essential to this whole technique, an unquestioning media. You communicate to the public the version of your covertly created event that you want, i.e. Bin Laden did it, i.e. Lee Harvey Oswald killed Kennedy, and all these things. And then you want the public to react with outrage, with fear, with this can't go on, something must be done, what are they going to do about it? And then they, who covertly created the problem, then openly offer the solutions to the problems they've created. And 9/11 is the most classic expression of problem reaction solution I've ever come across. First of all, you have the problem, which was manipulated within the borders of the United States. You immediately blame someone, just like Lee Harvey Oswald or whatever, because you want people to focus on, he's the villain, this is the person, no need to look any further, this is the man. And then you get the reaction, understandably, from 9/11, fear, outrage, horror, and then you offer the solutions. Hey, we can't let this happen, we've got to do something about this. So therefore, to protect the people, we're going to take your freedoms away. Right, we're going to have Patriot bills and all this stuff. And it's classic, and it's happening all the time. And as with Iraq, sometimes they don't even need to have a real problem. They just have to get the people to believe there is a real problem. So, hey, we want to invade Iraq. We need support from the people. What do we do? Hey, we'll say he's got weapons of mass destruction. That can affect us. Okay. Mantra, weapons of mass destruction, weapons of mass destruction. Hey, weapons of mass destruction. Oh, God, we've got to do something. Hey, we'll invade Iraq. Yeah, we'll support you, George. Go and do that. And this is how it works all the time. So that's why I said at that point, Mitch, that you quoted, that knowing this manipulation, knowing its techniques and knowing where it wants to go is essential to taking control back of our own minds and our own lives, because if we start not to accept the official version of events unquestioningly and we make it stand up to questioning and stand up to research, then we are going to not be scammed in the way that we have up to this point.
Okay.
I'll take control back.
A couple of questions, David. One, of course, is related to what's known as the Illuminati.
Right.
And as you quote in the book, which I believe perhaps means the illuminated ones.
Yep.
And you write this, the conspiracy to create a centralized global fascist state is orchestrated in the five-sense world. Then you go on to mention the Freemasons, Knight of the Malta, Knight Templar,
yep.
And the Jesuits.
Yeah, yeah, and many others. It's like a web. If people imagine a web with a spider in the middle, the spider's where the real, real power and the orchestration comes from, and that spider relates itself to very, very few people. And then out from the spider come the different strands in the web. The closer the strands are to the web, the more elite, the more secretive, and the more exclusive are the secret societies and the organizations. And the further out you get, you start to hit organizations that directly, are in the public arena.
Now, David, let me ask you, as we go into this, what is it that you noticed, found out about, research that tells you that the so-called illuminated ones took the red pill? In other words, what makes you think that they're not in the illusion just as much as most of us?
I wouldn't say that they aren't. It's a matter of which level of the illusion.
Yes.
I've said before, the manipulators are in a box themselves, and to control us, they have to put us in a smaller box. We have the capacity to go beyond where they are. But what happens is, from cradle to grave, we are constantly manipulated to stay asleep. Look at just the basic way that society is structured. One of the greatest, if not the greatest, prisons that people live in is the fear of what other people think. What this means is that it creates a fear to express anything that is different to the norm. You must come across some of this stuff, Mitch, when you're talking talking about earth changes.
Oh, yes.
What are you talking about? You bleak crackers. What are you talking about? And what happens is that a few, and in awareness, we're talking a very few at that, the spider center, if you like. For them to control the many, they have to get the many to control each other. So what they do is this. They set the norms in society, what is considered right and wrong, moral and immoral, possible and impossible, sane and insane. And it creates what I call a hassle-free zone or a comfort zone of norms. If you live your life within those norms and accept them, then you'll be left alone. If you don't, then you're going to get ridicule or condemnation for what has become a crime of being different. And of course, once you open your heart and you open your mind and you start to access a greater level of consciousness, which gives you another point of observation of the world we live in, one thing's for certain, mate, you're going to start being different. You're going to start feeling different. You're going to start thinking different. You're going to observe different. You're going to be different. And I know a lot of people who have reached that point, but they dare not express it because of what the fear of what other people think. The Japanese have this wonderful phrase that sums it up. I didn't realize it was a national phrase until I went there to speak. And it says, don't be the nail that stands out above the rest, because that's the first one to get hit.
Yes. And, oh, yes, and that sounds like you, doesn't it?
That's the basic formula for keeping people's heads down and their heads down and their mouths shut, even if they've started to see
the awareness. You are so right about that, David. Now, are there times when you realize that indeed you may be, let's say, the sacrificial lamb, so to speak? In other words, maybe you're the front line, the front wave, the first wave to open minds, and those behind you would probably be the ones to carry it out.
Well, it's kind of funny. I was once described by a psychic as the front of a snowplow. It has felt like that sometimes, because you do back your head against a wall. But you know, one of the things I've learned, Mitch, particularly in the last 2 years, I've really, really started to become a knowing rather than a intellectual thinking, and that is that we really do create our own reality. Our reality is going on according to our belief. Our belief edits reality. I mean, there's psychological research to show this, that information that comes into the eye.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Hold on, David. I want to go there, but let me build a little bit more of a foundation.
Okay, but I just want to just say this in relation to the point you make, that you start to realize that whether I am, at the front of the snowplow and others behind will carry it out, or whether I will carry it out with the people behind or with the people alongside me, is actually my choice. It's my choice. If that's my reality, that I am the front of the snowplow and other people will carry it out, that is what will happen, because I'll manifest it in my reality.
Yes.
If it's not, then I'll manifest another reality. This is the big key that we need to get across to people. You are in control of your reality. What we've done is been manipulated to give that control away to others by accepting externally implanted beliefs as our reality, when it's just there to manipulate our reality.
Yes, now that goes back to the different levels, as I had mentioned earlier. In other words, the so-called illuminated ones, or the Illuminati, or whatever you want to call it, they too are victim of their own illusion. Is that not correct?
Exactly. once you really start to open up to this, and you start to open your heart and open your mind, and your consciousness expands, you access more of the infinite consciousness that we all are, you start to realize that the Illuminati and everything involved in that is just another level of illusion.
Okay, now I want to ask you, David, because I guess I'm on the lower level, so just bear with me. I am certainly willing to take the red pill. Matter of fact, I think I've already taken the red pill, but I may not be down as far in the rabbit hole as you are.
Right.
So bear with me as we kind of crawl down there together.
Sure.
I got to confess, folks, just recently have I seen manifest. In other words, I had kind of believed. Now I've seen it in action, and that is that we are in a fascist world. Now, before you start sending me hate mail, let me explain what the word fascist means. Most of you already know, but let me give you a very simple comparison. fascism simply means corporatism, folks. That's all. It simply means that the corporations are running the world. Does anybody doubt that now? I don't think so. When my eyes were open, David, was this last event, this last coup in Haiti, when they took Aristotle out. And of course, this thing has been repeating itself for decades, but to me, this was the first manifestation once I found out that Walmart, JCPenney, Sears, all the merchandise was being made there, and then when Aristide wanted to kick out the army and have his own police force, and of course the army was part, I guess you would call part of the Illuminati world government, that is when it really hit me like a ton of bricks. So that is my level of entry. Now, I'm going to suggest, David, that many in the world could probably accept the idea, the concept, if not the fact, that the world really is simply a corporate global conglomerate. Now, take us from that point.
For a few to control the many, you have to centralize decision making. The more points of decision making there are for people, the less control any one group is going to have over them. Diversity is the worst nightmare of tyranny. What the whole agenda is to constantly centralize power, centralize ownership of the media, crucially. My goodness, are we seeing that with Clear Channel and all these other people, the Murdoch empires. Control of food resources, of the things that we need to live and survive. Control of resources like oil and control of the pharmaceutical industry. All these different areas are controlled by the very transnational corporations you're talking about. Now, when you do the research, you find that there is a structure of pyramids within pyramids. It's like Russian dolls, a small doll inside a bigger doll inside a bigger doll. Well, it's pyramids inside bigger pyramids inside bigger pyramids. And so a transnational corporation in itself is a pyramid. You've got the massively few at the bottom who work for that corporation, like Walmart, for instance, who have absolutely not a clue what the agenda of that organization is. The only people that really know how it all fits together are the very few at the top. Now, that transnational corporation pyramid fits into the transnational corporation global pyramid. And at the top of that, all these apparently different, apparently competing transnational corporations are controlled by the same people to the same agenda. Same with the oil companies, same with the pharmaceutical companies, same in the end with media ownership. And they are the ones that place the people like Bush and Kerry. They're both members of the same secret society, Bush and Kerry, the Skull and Bone Society at Yale University. They place them into power. This is why someone like Bush, who was the chosen one at the last election, broke all records for raising money for political campaigning. It's because he was the one they wanted. And they then, as part of putting them in, they have to carry out, or else, the will of those that put them in. And it's kind of interesting, Mitch, you were talking there about Haiti. I have a wonderful quote here, synchronistically, by a guy called Major General Smedley Butler. He was twice awarded the Medal of Honor. He served more than 30 years in the United States Marine Corps. And in 1933, mate, right, because this is not new, this is what he said. Like all members of the military profession, I never had a thought of my own until I left the service. My mental faculties remained in suspended animation while I obeyed the orders of higher-ups. This is typical with everyone in the military service. I helped make Mexico, especially Tampico, safe for American oil interests in 1914. I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National City Bank boys to collect revenues in. I helped in the raping of a half a dozen Central American republics for the benefits of Wall Street. I helped purify Nicaragua for the international banking house of Brown Brothers in 1909-1912. I brought light to the Dominican Republic for American sugar interests in 1916. In China, I helped to see that Standard Oil went its way unmolested. So the military is sold to us in the movie as a vehicle for defending the people, when in their secret agenda, the military is actually a vehicle for advancing and defending the interests of the corporations, which in the end are owned by the same people, which is why Henry Kissinger, quoted by Bob Woodward in one of his books, described the American troops as dumb, stupid animals to be used to advance American foreign policy. By American foreign policy, it's Illuminati foreign policy. I feel sorry for America, really, because Americans in general get painted as the great Satan. Oh, it's America, they're the ones. When actually America is just being used as a vehicle for this network to advance its agenda. Now, and one of the things that in the agenda is to use America, Mitch, this is so important, to destroy America as a superpower. Because what they want is a world government which would dictate to all the countries of the world, a world central bank that would control world finance, a world army that would impose the will of the world government on any countries that didn't want to accept it, a microchip population, and that's what they want. Now, world government dictatorships and superpowers do not go together, because superpowers can say, hey, world government over here, have you seen our military? Have you seen our economic resources? We're not doing it, okay? So the idea in the movement towards this world government is to use America to destroy itself, to use America to go on these wars of conquest and stuff across the Middle East and across towards and over to China, so that they, in advancing the agenda in terms of control, they destroy themselves militarily and economically.
Okay.
So the world government
can then hold it there for
the United States.
All right, hold it there for just a second, David. Let me welcome those that are coming in at the bottom of the hour. Welcome, you're listening to a live interview with David Icke. This is Mitch Batras, and you're listening to Earth Changes TV Radio Hour. We have already, in just 20 minutes, really covered quite a bit, but yet just scratched the surface. And let me put it this way, folks. David and I have a feeling many of you have chose to take the red pill, so join us. Here's the difference. I think we're probably at different levels, to use the phrase, how far down the rabbit hole do you want to go? After reading David's book, I can tell you he's way down there. I have begun the journey. I don't know what place, but I'm not near as far down as he is. But my eyes are beginning to open. I have no resistance whatsoever in acknowledging that there is a superpower, a hidden agenda, that the world certainly has become a fascist world, which simply means, folks, before you send the letters, fascism simply means corporatism. If you know the fundamentals and mechanics of what a corporation does, then you know what fascism is. That's what's occurring. Now, my question, David, is this. I would say that 10 years ago, what you're saying now would have been phenomenal, and people would have dropped their jaw or written you off as a wacko.
Right.
But today...
They did, Mitch.
Really, as if they didn't. Yeah. Today, David, I would be comfortable, and I'm quite serious about this, I would be very comfortable in speaking on these terms to my mainstream colleagues. And you know what? I don't think they would flinch. I think they seriously would understand. And matter of fact, probably many of them would agree to this concept. What do you say?
Well, I agree for this reason. Some years ago, I was saying that there's going to come a point, and 2012 is a real big important year for these people. They really want much of this structure, if not all of it, in place by 2012, which is why they're trying to push it on as fast as they can. That there would come a window of time, and there always is, when that which has remained hidden starts to break the surface, because it has to. If what's remained hidden and what is being manipulated to happen is going to happen and society is going to reflect it, then there comes a point where it breaks the surface and you can actually see it. And we're in that point now. I mean, it's so blatant what's happening now.
Yes. Now, let me. Speaking of that, I'm on the page that the title is "Hidden." Hiding the Secrets.
Yeah.
And instead of going through what you've outlined, I'm going to just reference a particular gospel, and it's the one that's been hidden. It's the Gospel of Thomas. Now, the reason it's been hidden is because in the Gospel of Thomas, it empowers each and every one of us, as opposed to succumbing to an external power. Now, does that is that consistent with your writing here?
Totally consistent, Mitch. For the very reasons we talked about a little earlier, the religious structure has been set up, the political structure has been set up, every structure has basically been set up for people to give their power to it. Give your power power to the priest. Give your power to the Pope. Give your power to the Ayatollah. Give your power away. Give your power to some external god. Give your power away to the president. Give your power away to the defense secretary at the Pentagon. It's all about giving power away. And when you give power away, it's funny that people tend to use it back against you. And the power that this Illuminati have in their manipulations, it's merely the power that we give away every day. And we need to take it back. We need to take control of our minds and our reality back by coming to our conclusions. Not the truth, not someone else's truth, not David Icke's truth. Our truth. What is truth to us?
In fact, David, I believe it's in the Gospel of Thomas that you may remember this, where Jesus, and I'm using my words, of course Jesus didn't say this, but Jesus got pissed off at his apostles, because his apostles kept saying, oh Jesus, we have to follow you, you are our leader. And Jesus turned around and said to them, stop it. I am not the source of the power. It is within you.
Exactly. That's why when, you know, journalists say to me, do you have many followers? And I said, well, you know, if I've got one follower, that one follower ain't hearing me.
Yeah.
This is about people taking their power back. See, I'm talking in Pasadena Civic Auditorium on the 19th of July for 7 hours on the Saturday. Sorry, the 19th of June for 7 hours. Is that what was a week on Saturday? About less than 10 days. And one of the things I say is, hey, if anyone leaves this theater today saying everything that David Icke says is right, then I'm the most disappointed man in the place. It's information. Take what feels right to you, leave the rest. Be your truth, not someone else's. What the Illuminati want us all to be is their version of truth, because then we will see reality, we will edit reality, and we will behave in ways that suit the agenda. That's where the revolution is, to transform from a prison to a paradise. It's not in stockpiling weapons. It's not in hanging George Bush. It's in taking our power back over our own reality.
Now, David, did you know that much of what you said and much of what is written in your books, that it is exactly what Mayan prophecy says, what the Mayan calendar quotes? Did you know that they said that it is this time, the time that we're in right now, that we will rise in consciousness, our vibration will rise, if you will, and that our intuitive nature will increase, and a sense of purging, what they call the transition, will occur at a climax or apex in 2012. Are you familiar with that?
I am familiar with that. And you know, like I said earlier, when I walked into that psychic's room, back in 1990, one of the things that I was told, as well as the earth changes, as well as, you know, what my role was going to be, was there is going to be a spiritual revolution. There is going to be a transformation of consciousness that's going to take people onto a completely different level of awareness. And it's happening. I mean, I've kind of been a barometer of it, because when I started talking about this, I mean, enormous ridicule. I mean, I could walk down any street in Britain, because I was well known in Britain, and still am at that time as a television presenter. I could walk down any street in Britain without being laughed at by most of the people. Going into a bar, well, forget it. There was uproar. A comedian only had to say my name in 1991-92, and he got a laugh at even without a joke. I was doing talks in those days, and I would book these tiny little halls, you know, drafty little halls, because I was earning no money and whatever, and I would put the chairs out, you know, maybe 20 people, sometimes less, would come, I would speak, I would then put the chairs back and leave for them when I arrived. And that's what was happening even in the early 90s. Now, and through the 90s to the present day, I've seen a phenomenal transformation of consciousness. You know, you hit it on the head, mate, earlier when you said that a few years ago people would have, you know, said wacko, but now you would talk about this stuff to your, you know, mainstream friends. This is what's happening. This awakening that the Mayan calendar talks about, that this psychic message to me talks about, and again, that is manifest across many, many different experiences for many people. It tells the same story. We are opening our minds to who we really are, and the illusion that we've been been living all this time, and it's a fantastic time to be alive, and it's a wonderful time because we're not the people. As someone once said, I think the Hopi say this, we are the people we've been waiting for. That is so powerful because, oh, we're waiting for someone to come and save us. When's he going to come? Hey, he's here. Look in the mirror. You're looking at him. And this is the time we're in now where we start to realize that we are the people we've been waiting for.
Yes.
And we're not going to look sometime in the future, oh, I hope it will be better for the kids. We are going to live this transformation in these years that we're now going into, and we're going to see this prison become a paradise.
All right. Let me go to the page that you speak of, the Traveling Empire. And I want to tell you, David, that I had a guest on, and we were talking about the invasion of Iraq, and that it really had nothing to do with, of course, the weapons of mass destruction and all that other crap, but it also, the suggestion was that it didn't even have to do with oil. What was pointed out, David, was that the first thing that was hit were the museums, and what was taken out of the museums and the artifacts. Now, here in this chapter, let me just read this one sentence. This is out of David Icke's book, books, folks. The book I'm reading out of is Tales from the Time Loop. Quote, it was the accounts, well, first he's talking about Iraq. He says it was the accounts, texts, and artifacts from Sumer and Babylon that were burned or looted from Iraqi museums in the wake of the American and British invasion. David, what can you tell us about that?
Well, what happened, Mitch, is that, you know, when I started this journey in the early 1990s, the information that came towards me, that I started to fit together, was all concerned with how the world is controlled today, the structures of power, how society has been set up to give the illusion of freedom, while fundamentally controlling the people, and how the pyramid system works, problem, reaction, solution, all that stuff. But once I'd reached the point where I'd gotten in my mind how this all was possible and how it was working and what the agenda was and where it was designed to go, the obvious question then was, hold on a minute, when did this start? Because it was obvious that this whole deal hasn't been put together in 5 years or 50 years. When the heck did this start? So I started to go back trying to find a start for it. And you get comfortably back to the time of the Crusades and the creation of the Knights Templar and many other Knights organizations, what became the Knights of Malta, which was called at the time the Knights Hospitaller of St. John of Jerusalem, and carried on going back. Eventually, I'm thousands of years BC, and I'm looking at places like Sumer, now called Iraq, and Babylon, now called Iraq, and it's not the start of the story, but it is a point where you can pick it up and run with it very clearly into the modern world, into today. And what you find is that, and you find this in every culture around the world, not just in that area, you find stories of an interbreeding between humans and a non-human race that created hybrid bloodlines. I mean, even in Genesis, it talks about the sons of God who interbred with the daughters of men. When you go into the African culture, and I have a great friend there called Credo Mutwa, who is the historian of the Zulu nation, he tells exactly the same story from the black African historical perspective of this interbreeding. He's got artifacts that relate to it. And these bloodlines were the ones that became perceived as special, certainly perceived themselves as special. These were the ones that became the kings and queens of the ancient world. These were the ones that claimed the right to rule because of their connections and their bloodline. And if people find that fantastic, well, hold on. About an hour and a half, 2 hours from where I live in England is Buckingham Palace. We have a head of state in Britain today for one reason and one reason only, her DNA. And these were these hybrid bloodlines were in power in Babylon, where they created their religious and their ritual structure and their economic structure and all these other things and the ways of controlling the people. And that they've taken with them as they've expanded across the world. The next stopover from Babylon as a headquarters was Rome. And Rome, we had the Roman Empire. Then, and that it's still massively involved in Rome, the Illuminati. And then it moved up into Europe, where these bloodlines became the aristocracy and the royal families of Europe. And then through the British Empire, of course, they said it was so vast the sun never set on it, quite true. The French Empire and other European empires, particularly the British, they expanded these bloodlines all across the world into the Americas, through the Spanish and the Portuguese, into Central South America, over to Australia, into Africa, into Asia. And these bloodlines have gone on controlling those countries,
okay.
Even after colonial rule, because colonial rule was just a sleight of hand that moved in-your-face dictatorship, where people knew they were controlled from Europe and Britain, for covert dictatorship, the hidden-hand dictatorship, where they're still controlled from the same place, but they have the illusion of being in control of their own
country. All right. I want to hold it there, David. Now, this is where... Well, David, I just got to say, this is where I just haven't gone down the rabbit hole that far.
Right.
So just please respect my limitations
sure.
here.
But I have to say one thing very quickly. It's really, really important for anyone that's not come across this who's in America. The goddess of Babylon was called Queen Semiramis, also known as Ishtar or Istar, and under other names. The way that she was portrayed in Babylon is precisely the mirror image of the Statue of Liberty. And the Statue of Liberty was given to New York by French Freemasons from Paris who understood what she symbolized. In Babylon, the god of Babylon, Nimrod, was symbolized as a torch, a flame, or a lighted torch. So what the Statue of Liberty is, it appears to the people, again, movie secret agenda, to be the symbol of the land of the free, when actually it's Queen Semiramis, the Illuminati goddess of Babylon, holding the flame of Nimrod.
Okay.
The image of the Statue of Liberty.
All right, David, I'm going to be selfish because I really want to get into another part of the book.
Okay.
And unfortunately, with our limited time, we can't cover everything.
Sure.
I'm skipping all the way over to chapter 12.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if you had this in mind when you wrote this, David, but are you aware that this whole chapter and the two that follow it are exactly what quantum physics is all about? Were you coming from the mindset and perspective of quantum physics when you wrote this, or did you come at it from another angle?
What happened, Mitch, was I wrote a book called about the World Trade Center disaster, Alice in Wonderland, the World Trade Center disaster, and when I finished that, I said to my wife, you know, if I'm going to take this story on, I have to go in awareness, not in some dream where I wake up and I think, was that real? I'm forgetting it already, but in awareness to other realms, other dimensions of consciousness, so I could look at this reality from that perspective. And around that time, and I was invited to go to the Brazilian rainforest and speak to a group of people who would be partaking at other times with other people of something called ayahuasca, which is a rainforest plant which South American shaman have been using for at least centuries to take people into other states of awareness. And I thought, whoa, I'm going to have a go at that. I'd reached 50 years of age without even smoking a joint, amazing as it may seem. I've lived a sheltered life, see. But I thought, I'm going to have a go at this. And over two nights, I could have taken it four times, but two was enough for me. I went into amazing places, and on the second night, for about 5 hours, I was in a place of utter bliss where there was no point where I ended and everything else began. It was one seamless, unified consciousness. I was still self-aware, but I was everything and everything was me, which is what we all are. The oneness of everything, this illusion of division and diversity is just that, illusion, division rather, is just that illusion. So over this 5 hours, all this voice talked to me about, Mitch, was in very profound terms and very simple terms, the nature of reality that we are experiencing in this so-called five-sense world and how we create it. And just to finish the point, because if you
please, question, go ahead.
I then came back from Brazil with all this stuff in my head. I had instant recall of all of it. And I thought, okay, I'm now going to start looking into quantum physics and psychological research.
So it did happen before you
yeah.
had to, oh, that is fantastic.
To see if I could cross-reference that And what I found, Mitch, and I know you've been involved in this area in your life, what I found was, as you will know, that science doesn't talk to itself. There's all these endless scientific disciplines, and none of them talk to each other.
Yes.
And when you actually look around the different disciplines, they've actually sussed it. They've sussed the nature of reality, but very few of them have actually put it together.
Yes.
And one of the reasons they haven't is because the system gives them a hard time if they challenge the conventional
reality. Oh, that is so true. That is so true, David. Matter of fact, in my book, Solar Rain, I have a whole chapter on that. And it's titled "It's a New Paradigm." It's titled "NASA, NOAA, and a New Paradigm." Of course,
right.
Mine is related to the Sun-Earth connection. But yes, you are so correct about challenging a paradigm.
So then we should ask this question: if science and those who control science are really involved, truly, genuinely, in discovering the nature of life, the universe, everything, reality, and telling the people what's been found, why do scientists who start to realize fundamental truths with their research, why do they get a hard time for going outside of the conventional scientific view? Because they want to keep us in the box. Quantum physics and all that comes from it is absolutely desperately dangerous.
Now, David, are you sure it's that, or is it that they're shamed so strongly that they're blackballed and their career's at stake, so they dare not try to push it?
Right. But again, where does the fear come from? Why is it that a scientist can win massive acclaim until the moment he says something, hey, I've discovered this is fantastic, it's all an illusion. Suddenly the funding stops,
exactly.
Suddenly the plaudits stop, the acclaim stops. What is the force we need to ask ourselves, Mitch, that imposes that on people, that breaks the surface of the conventional view of what reality is? It's the very force I'm talking about, the one that keep us in the box.
Absolutely. Now, David, I got to ask you, your book, I really, really like this book, folks. I'm telling you, it's called Tales from the Time Loop, and I'll tell you what, if this isn't a manuscript for the movie The Matrix, I don't know what is. So my question to you, David, is did you also back in, just like you did with quantum physics, did you back into the concept of The Matrix, or did you see The Matrix or read the book and then write your material?
No, I've never read the book. What happened was, right from the start of this, from the early 90s, I was aware on an intellectual level, which is very different to the level I'm aware of it now. It's a much deeper level. It's a knowing rather than that's intellectually interesting. I was aware on an intellectual level that the world was an illusion. And when I was in Canada at the time, funnily enough, with some friends, and the lady that became my wife saw this movie and said, hey, you know, you've got to see this movie. So I walked into this theater and I watched the first Matrix movie, and I nearly fell through the seat at how accurate that was.
you went to confirm.
It was unbelievable. And the more I watched it, the more you pick up more and more subtleties within it. And what I've done, we're talking about The Matrix and relating to it, has been very specifically done purposely, because when you have such a wonderful visual, and there's nothing better than a visual representation, talk about pictures, paints a thousand words and all that stuff, such a wonderful visual representation of our reality and the illusory nature of it, that of course I'm going to keep referring to it, because it's a wonderful point of reference that people can take the words and say, yeah, I can actually see that because I've seen the movie. I can see what you're trying to say. So yeah, I mean, it's been terrific to have that.
David, if I could,
a visual representation of what the words say.
If I could, let me go back to your book, and I'm on page 324, and you state this. Now, folks, hold on to your chair, because we're getting ready to inch down the rabbit hole a little further. Now, this may be a bit confusing to you, but that's what quantum physics is. This is what David says. The subconscious is only subconscious to the conscious mind. At its own level of awareness, it too is conscious and has a different reality to the five sense conscious mind that directly experiences this world. Now, to many, David, that's going to be a little confusing. Can you feather that out a bit for us?
Yeah, we have different levels of consciousness, which are aware of different levels of reality. I mean, you take any conventional psychologist or any conventional version of psychology, and they talk about the subconscious mind. Of course, I mean, without the subconscious mind, we'll all be dead, because it's the subconscious mind that's driving the car when we're daydreaming and think, oh my goodness, what happened to the last 2 miles? So then you ask the question, okay, what is this subconscious mind? How vast is it? Where does it end? and the subconscious is all that exists that is not conscious in our reality. In other words, it's infinite. And so there are different levels of this consciousness, and they're aware of different levels of awareness. So you know, one level of it is intuition.
Yes.
Where you can get right out there, and you know, it's not just subconscious mind; it's consciousness in all its forms. Mind is only one level of consciousness. This is why you can feel and know things in the heart, but your mind is going, that doesn't make sense to me, it can't be right. One of the wars that goes on in people is between what they think, the mind that's related to this reality overwhelmingly in its conditioning, and what we feel intuitively. And so many people are trapped in the mind so that they their intuition says, I want to go here. This is what I want to do. The mind's going, you can't do that. You've got a mortgage. You've got a husband. You can't do that. And so the mind wins over. And what changed my life and transformed my life is in the early 90s, or late 80s, actually, I decided that if my intuition and my mind were ever, my intellect were ever in conflict again, I was going to go with my intuition every time. And what it does, it gets you into some interesting situations.
Because it takes you out of your comfort zone.
It's not seeing the world like the conditioned mind.
Yeah.
And the conditioned mind, first of all, goes, what are you doing?
Yeah.
This is crazy. Look what's happening. People are laughing at you. But if you keep going with it, what happens is this. Again, two levels of consciousness coming together. If you keep going with it, eventually your intellect observes that although when you go with your intellect, you get into some interesting little situations, it all turns out perfectly synchronistically in the end. And then the intellect starts to say, well, hold on a minute. When you follow your intuition, it all works out perfectly in the end.
Yeah.
And then your intellect and your intuition come into sync. So you start thinking and feeling the same thing. You start to become whole instead of fragmented.
Yeah.
And it's unifying all these different levels of our consciousness so that not at war with each other, but they're in harmony with each other.
Yeah.
And that is the transformation that the Mayan calendar and so many other sources talk about.
Oh, absolutely. Now, real if it's possible, David, briefly, well, it would take 2 or 3 minutes. The time loop. You talk quite a bit about the time loop. Could you please give us a cursory understanding?
Well, what this voice went on about for some considerable time was that this five-sense reality, there is no time. I mean, you get into quantum physics and all that stuff, and you start to realize there is no time. I mean, I think Einstein said time is an illusion because it's only in the point of the observer decides how fast time actually appears to pass. I think he said, worse to the effect of, if you're in the company of a beautiful woman, time tends to pass
yes.
very quickly.
Yes.
And if your finger's in a boiling water, time tends to pass very slowly.
Right.
So time is an illusion. But what it was said is this matrix, this illusory reality, had created this illusion of time. And what it was like a loop going round and round and round, appearing to pass from past to present, through present to future. And there were many things in this illusion that, like the passage of night and day, like the aging of the physical body, which is merely a hologram, which doesn't have to age. It only ages if we believe it does. The whole of this illusion is controlled by our belief. Our belief in what is real becomes our experience of reality. And so this Illuminati know that if they can externally implant our sense of belief in what is real, then we, through this system, will manifest that reality which suits them. So the time loop is there to give the illusion of the movement of time, the illusion of aging and all these things, because this one consciousness is no time.
Yeah.
It just is. And if you disconnect from no time with the illusion of the movement of time, you are disconnecting by that very belief in the movement of time alone from this oneness which is no time. And the whole of society, because at the highest level, these guys know how this works, the whole of society has been set up to disconnect us. We talked a few minutes ago about this multidimensional consciousness we have, to disconnect us from higher levels of our own consciousness.
Yes.
So basically, we get trapped in a fraction of our infinite self. And this is why, if you look at society, it's set up to entice and trap the five senses. It's all about taste, touch, sight, hearing, holding us in the five senses. Because there's nothing wrong with the five senses. Experience them, enjoy them, they're wonderful. But if we get trapped in them alone, we are disconnected from infinite self, and we become like a droplet disconnected from the ocean, and therefore we're operating on a fraction of the true infinite magnificence that we are.
Now, you mentioned something about fear. Let me just read this brief sentence, and then you talk about an agenda. You say, the matrix, the projected reality of subconscious mind, absorbed the energy of fear, generated particularly within the five-sense time loop, and took on a life and agenda of its own. David, what is the agenda?
Well, I tell you, what happened was, and a lot of this stuff that came to me in that rainforest experience was kind of what to me. It was that this reality, this matrix, is actually the human subconscious collective mind. It's what Jung called, Carl Jung, the Swiss psychiatrist, called the collective unconscious. And that we, as a collective mind, and again, at some level of our consciousness, we're all connected. In fact, we're all connected anyway. We created this reality, and it was like, it was described to me as projecting a movie from a projector onto a screen. What it said was that at some point, this projected illusory reality of experience accessed a external independent energy source of its own and took on a life of its own. In other words, the projection on the screen started to have a form of sentience, and that the energy that it accessed, its source of energy, was fear. The more fear it generated, and that's not just, oh, I'm terrified of the guy across the street. It's stress, it's guilt, it's resentment. It's all these things are expressions of fear. But it started absorbing fear. And it's interesting, you know, again, I nearly fell off my seat. In the Matrix movie, what does the Morpheus character do? He holds up a battery and says that the people, the force control in the Matrix has turned humans into this. Holds up a battery. In other words, they were getting their energy from human from human beings, from human energy field. And when this voice in Brazil was explaining all this to me, I was actually shown a picture. I don't know if you know the movie, The Sorcerer's Apprentice. I think it's a Disney movie, where the sorcerer wants to create something that will do all the chores in his home for him, and he turns this, I think it's a broom, into a kind of a
The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Sorcerer's Apprentice, yeah. And what happens is his created person to do the chores takes on a life of its own and takes the control of the sorcerer. And this was being shown to me as this explanation was taking place. And so the Matrix, this massive thought field, if you like, which we live within, the illusion, has actually taken on a life of its own, and it's in its interest to manifest constant division, conflict, fear, and all these other low vibrational emotions.
Okay, David, I gotta hold it right there because we're at the top of the hour. But what I'd like to do, I just have to do it. David, can I carry you over for another 5 to 7 minutes?
Sure, no problem.
Okay, folks, I just have to do it. I hope you can stay with us. I realize we're at the top of the hour, and we're going over just a bit, but I just got to turn this page because so much of what we have spoke about is just incredible, and I'm very comfortable in affirming such. Lately, in this last half hour, we've been talking about quantum physics, and when it comes to fascism or corporatism, world state, the powers that be, whether you want to call it royalty or the Illuminati or any term you want to give, it does appear to put us in a powerless situation. It appears overwhelming, but listen to this, folks. I'm going to read just a little bit here, and then I'm going to ask David to comment. Now, listen to this very closely. This is a quote from David. Love does not abandon. There were no chosen ones whom God had selected. There was no God as humans perceived it, only the infinity or oneness of existence. The infinity was the balance of all things, while the matrix was calculated and manipulated in balance, in which oneness has been divided into polarities and dualities. David, now, as we go into this chapter, I'm really getting a strong sense of empowerment. Please comment.
Absolutely. Like when I talk at the in Pasadena the week on Saturday, the whole of the last 2 hours is all about empowerment, because when people talk about the conspiracy, and good luck to them, Mitch, you know, the more people are aware of the manipulation, the better. But when you just talk about the conspiracy on a five-sense level, you can also disempower people, because people go, oh my goodness, what can we do?
Yes.
You have to complete the circle.
Absolutely.
The fact is that while it may seem to be a lost cause, as this whole agenda motors in front of our eyes, actually, as this communication in that Brazilian rainforest said, what you're looking at is something in its death throes, this system of control in its death throes. It's going. It's a done deal. It's just a case of how painful it goes, and that's how we react to it. But what this... When I went into this other state, this very, very deep, far, far away from here consciousness state, the first thing the voice said to me was, first of all, that we're taking you to the place you came from and the place to which you will return, so that you can see from another perspective the place you're experiencing now. Not that there is such a place as thing as locational place either. I mean, but when I get into that, but then it said, all you really need to remember is this: infinite love is the only truth. Everything else is illusion. And it kept repeating it over and over. And put another way, it is, everything is one infinite consciousness. That is the only truth. Everything else is illusion. It's the imagination of that consciousness in infinite forms manifesting illusory realities. And we're living in one. We're experiencing one. But what we are is oneness. Infinite, eternal, never dies, is never born. There's no such thing as life and there's no such thing as death. Everything just is. There's no light and there's no dark. There is only oneness. The light and the dark are polarities. Therefore, they're illusions. As it said to me, there is only one oneness. And I experienced oneness as a non-vibrational state. It was stillness, and at the best, it was like a slow-motion wave from time to time. And it said something very interesting, actually. If it vibrates, it's illusion. And what it said was, like I say, there's only one oneness. And for something to vibrate, it needs two polarities between which to oscillate.
Yes.
So when you are in a state of true oneness, nothing vibrates. It just is. So if it vibrates, it's illusion. This whole reality that we are experiencing, everything is a vibration. And there's nothing wrong with it. It can be a paradise. It can be a wonderful place of experiencing, of oneness, yourself in the face as another apparent human being, which is actually just another version of oneness. We are all each other. What has happened, however, is we've reached a point where some, some forces that have become confused have sought and have become so detached from an understanding of oneness that they wish to control and have power over people and all that stuff. We are bringing oneness back into this reality, expressing what it stands for. Love each other, because we are each other, and that is going to bring an end to this ludicrous, juvenile manipulation of our reality that's gone on this far simply because people weren't aware of its existence.
Absolutely, David, and that's also going to bring, unfortunately, an end to this interview.
Okay,
David, I'll tell you, you have gained a new fan.
Oh, right. Oh, I don't want any of that.
Now, you've been very humble, but let me do a little advertising for you, folks. David is going to be in Los Angeles, June 19th. I'm going to give you a few numbers, so get your pen out. Here we go. The number to get tickets for the Los Angeles event is 213-480-3232. That's 213-480-3232. To order his books, the number is 888-609-5006. Again, that's 888-609-5006. And finally, to get all this information, for those of you that are online, davidike.com. He spells his name, of course, D-A-V-I-D, David, I-C-K-E.com. David, I want to thank you so much for this enlightening interview.
Pleasure, Mitch. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Wow. I think I have twice as many questions as I did going into this. Now, folks, yes, if you noticed that I did steer away from the lizard people and all that stuff, it's because I'm just not there, you know. But look what we did do, and look what we did affirm. Much of what David is talking about is so easily documented in quantum physics. This has been around for some time. What I find interesting is how David came about it. Evidently, he backed into it. In other words, he experienced these things and then learned about quantum physics instead of the other way around. Now, what a beautiful thing to do. And I kind of understand that. It's the aha type syndrome. And prior to that, this Illuminati stuff and all this thing, you know, folks, this is just me. This is my conjecture. That the Illuminati simply means royalty. You know, it's just... it's something that's been around forever. I don't think it's any different than it has ever been. And that is simply that the power, basically the golden rule. The people with the gold make the rules. That's all. Secret societies, Illuminati, this, that, the other. Yeah, sure. But is it really any different than what's always been? Now, maybe people thought that monarchies and royalty and kingship was dead. Maybe that's the illusion, but it's not. It's called corporatism now, folks. It's royalty and corporatism. It's so easy to, you know, follow the bouncing ball now. Much more on this later. Time to go. This is Mitch Patras for Earth Changes TV Radio Hour, signing off. Bye-bye.